From the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin, welcome to The Surgery Set. I'm Jonathan Kohler, an assistant professor in pediatric surgery here in Madison. I'm new here, and with this podcast, I'm exploring the ideas, inventions, and innovations of our department, plus meeting a lot of really interesting people. I'm excited for you to join me. Our guest today is Dr. Amber Shada. She's an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin in the Division of Minimally Invasive Surgery. She specializes in minimally invasive techniques for esophageal and gastric disorders, abdominal wall hernias, and gallbladder disorders. So welcome. You're just like me. You're new here. You've been here about a year.
I just hit my year anniversary.
Awesome. I think 2 weeks out on mine. And you are from Wisconsin originally, is that right?
That's right.
And you were in Kenosha and then here?
Born in Kenosha, did undergrad and med school here, so I'm a double badger.
Awesome. And then Virginia for residency and Portland, Oregon for minimally invasive?
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And now you're primarily working at the American Center.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And I think one of the things that we heard about in your Grand Rounds talk today, which people can see online and get CME credit for watching, is sort of the focus of your talk was innovations in minimally invasive techniques, specifically in endoscopic surgery, which I thought was amazing. I feel like I haven't been out of general surgery residency that long, but like this is new territory for me and not yet in the pediatric surgical realm.
It's close.
Yeah, it's exciting. One of the first things you talked about was sort of the training experience with endoscopy, and you reminded us that endoscopy is a surgical discipline, that a lot of the endoscopic techniques that we sort of, at least I think of as being sort of the province of gastroenterologists, is actually something that was invented by surgeons.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, surgeons are innovators. I think we get to see a lot of problems, and so we get to let our minds work on potential solutions for those problems. And that has continued, you know, since surgery was a discipline and continues to evolve, and endoscopy is no exception. Surgeons are instrumental in pushing it forward because we understand where we want to go with it because we do GI surgery, so we want to make it less invasive, and endoscopic surgery is a totally reasonable next step for that.
Yeah, and you make the point that rural surgeons particularly are doing endoscopy as a large portion of their practice, and that endoscopy is maybe undervalued in general surgery training now, but maybe becoming more so with this fundamentals of endoscopic surgery?
I think so. It'll be interesting to see what FES does to residency programs. Certainly gives an additional emphasis on training for endoscopy. And the addition of a rural surgery track, which UW has, clearly puts the priority on training surgeons to be full-spectrum general surgeons, and that includes endoscopy. There's no one who's going to question that. So between those two things, I think UW will be putting more focus on training in endoscopy, which it's a core part of general surgery training. It always has been. I think it just has slowly fallen by the wayside a little more than it should.
Yeah, and so sort of taking things from that, fundamentals, where it sounds as though future trainees may be expected to do more endoscopy, to pass an endoscopy skills curriculum, much like fundamentals of laparoscopic surgery, the FLS course that we're passing now. You've sort of taken things now in sort of the opposite extreme, like beyond fundamentals, you are like in cutting edge of endoscopy.
Right.
And the big thing that you're doing is POEM. Can you tell us a little bit?
Sure.
Remind me the acronym and then...
POEM is per-oral endoscopic myotomy, and it's cutting the muscle at the bottom of the esophagus to treat the outflow obstruction that is achalasia. Or achalasia is a pretty rare disease of motility, but patients with achalasia can't swallow. Things get stuck in their esophagus. They feel like they can't eat properly. So,
and the traditional therapy, I mean, I guess traditional in the sense that like that's what we've been doing now for, you said, 100 years, is the Heller myotomy. So making that incision, not through the mucosa, but specifically through the muscle of the esophagus down onto the stomach, and then a wrap around that.
Right.
That has become sort of, you know, was one of the early innovations in laparoscopic surgery, was making that a minimally invasive surgery, and now we may be able to sort of do away with it altogether. Can you just describe a little bit the procedure? And there are videos in your talk that people can see, but, you know, paint us a word picture of
sure.
a POEM.
So the patient's operation starts through the mouth. You put the endoscope down. You find the sphincter, and you can see where the esophagus ends, stomach starts. You back up a good distance from that because you're going to enter that submucosal space to get at the muscle higher than the actual muscle. And then you make a tunnel down, so you're preserving the mucosa, the inside surface of the esophagus, and tunneling in the submucosal space between the mucosa and the muscle. And so you tunnel all the way down and past the lower esophageal sphincter. You get into the submucosal space of the stomach, which can be very characteristic and easy to appreciate once you've seen it a few times. Then you back up, not all the way to the top of where you started your tunnel, but to the top of the sphincter, and you cut the sphincter. You use an endoscopic knife, and you can watch your knife go through the circular muscles only, and you can see the longitudinals behind it, and they stay intact. It's really beautiful. When you get to the bottom of the sphincter, you're essentially done, except you need to close that tunnel that you created to protect the mucosa, because the mucosa it's important to keep intact so that, you know, now without the circular muscle there, you just don't have all the layers of the esophagus, and you clearly don't want a leak.
Yeah.
So you back up and you close that mucosal hole.
It's with like a few endoscopic clips, or
you can sew it, whatever.
Yeah, that was amazing. You know? Seeing that you can actually suture down an endoscope. Yeah.
It's very cool.
And you show, and we are now doing this and have been doing it for a while. There are, you said, 100 centers in the U.S. that are
about that
doing POM, yeah, and they're having great results.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's, I think, why POM is so successful, because in many different endoscopist hands, you still get good results. The reason other notes procedures have fallen by the wayside, like no one takes the gallbladder out through the stomach anymore, even though that used to be a thing, is because it's really hard.
Yeah.
And so not many people can do it. But I think many people with the proper advanced endoscopy training can do a POM and have really good results.
Yeah, so it's less sort of the high-end natural orifice things you hear about, right? Transvaginal or transgastric cholecystectomies, and more like ERCP, which is sort of like a technically accessible thing for,
yeah,
people who know what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. It requires a lot of training to get good at it, but it's very doable with,
yeah,
the right amount of training.
That's really cool.
But I think the thing about the transgastric cholecystectomies and things is we could come back to that at some point if we have the right platform.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get adoption of robotics and allow people with basic surgical training or even advanced endoscopy training to easily take things out with a robot, it's going to open up a huge door for endoscopy.
Yeah, and part of your talk is, you know, you talk about how we're doing POM now and get into some of the details about who's candidate for POM, which is basically anybody who would be a candidate for Heller for the most part.
Yeah.
People who can tolerate a general anesthetic and don't have underlying problems with malignancy or pseudoachalasia. But one of the other things you talk about is the future of endoscopy and these sort of robotic innovations that are coming down the line. Tell us a little bit more about it. You know, where are we 10 years from now with endoscopy?
I think right now we have one major company in the U.S. that provides a robot platform, and that's used for a lot of different kinds of surgeries. But there are so many other companies out on the horizon, and some of them have endoscopic focus to their development. So once we have a robotic platform that's feasible to get into orifices, and then once we have the right tools, we need staplers, we need cautery and coagulation that's better than a basic Bovie, then we really have room to move and do some real organ surgery.
Yeah, you showed a picture of a pig sleeve gastrectomy done,
right,
endoscopically.
Exactly.
You know, and flexible staplers that are coming out,
right,
triangulating instruments, and a really remarkable range of, mm-hmm, things coming down the line.
It's neat stuff.
Do you have a sense of sort of what the timeline is on any of that? Or,
I mean, it's happening, right? There's already a robot out doing gastric surgery for gastric cancer in Singapore. So I think it's just a matter of time before it comes to market here.
For physicians who might be interested in sending patients with achalasia for evaluation for POM, what sort of things today do you need to see in those patients when they come to clinic? Should patients be coming with a set of studies already performed? Like, when is the right time to send somebody for evaluation for endoscopic myotomy?
Well, most people have the diagnosis of achalasia, and to get that, you need at minimum a esophagram, and probably manometry already done. Clearly, those things, you know, we have the capability to do if they're not done. But patients with dysphagia of any sort ought to be worked up for motility disorders like achalasia. And that always starts with a sophogram. Some patients with manometry, mm-hmm. all will eventually need it. But, you know, those are the things that I'm seeing my dysphagia patients coming. We have a, you know, comprehensive esophageal motility center, so we're able to do all of the testing required. But some patients are coming in with that testing. That's great.
And then if they are eligible for the procedure, they, like a hellermotomy, they spend a night in the hospital, but they're pain-free in the PACU.
Right.
And they're home the next day. Mm-hmm. Any restrictions post-op?
Just diet.
Okay.
We need those clips to stay on, the clothes. So I tell them they really shouldn't eat anything real solid for about a week. But after that, zero. And no restrictions on activity and no restrictions on work. Most people are back to work once the anesthesia has left their system. So
exciting times.
Yeah. That's great.
I guess it's important to think of it not as like being put out of business by an endoscope, but put into business by an endoscope, right?
It's just important to expand our armamentarium and do the best surgery for patients, you know. If you can get something done safely and effectively and use smaller incisions or no incisions, there's no reason why you shouldn't be trying to do that. And as surgeons, we've been doing it forever, right? The invention of the laparoscopic cholecystectomy, you know, now 30 years ago.
Right.
Has changed the way we do surgery. And it's going to, you know, the way we do surgery is going to continue to change. It's just we have to be adaptable and we have to figure out how to do the best for our patients as we go.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us today. And for people who are more interested in seeing some amazing videos and a lot of the data behind both the current state of advanced endoscopic surgery and some idea of what we may be able to see and treat going forward, I encourage you to go to our website, surgery.wisc.edu, where you can see Dr. Shada's talk in its entirety and get CME credit for it free online. So Dr. Shada, thank you so much for being part of the podcast today and look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you. That was great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us next time when we'll hear from Dr. James Economo, a professor of surgery and division chief of surgical oncology at UCLA, who discusses his research and involvement in the field of cancer care. The Surgery Set is a production of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and myself. It was audio engineered by Chris Hansen and edited by Alex Worley. Our theme song is On Wisconsin, arranged and produced by Jamie Schmidt. I encourage you to visit us at surgery.wisc.edu, where you can find links to Grand Rounds, free CME credits, and more. You can also check out the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Video Library for a wide range of medical education resources at videos.med.wisc.edu. In addition, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And of course, you can follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page and also find us on Twitter at Wisc Surgery, as well as me at J.E. Kohler. Please feel free to let us know how we're doing, and especially let us know if there are topics you'd like us to cover. Thanks, and we hope you check back soon.